Good morning. Today is Thursday, June 14th, 2018. It's 9 a.m. The county commissioners are joining in the BCC conference room for our 9 a.m. county administrative workshop. And first up is both presenters, Commissioner Hare, Commissioner Morgan, and Commissioner DeYoung. Item number 1A, Human Resources. Request for job description updates from Sheriff, Juvenile, Animal Shelter, Transit, IT, and Facilities. And with us we have J.J. Schofield.
Good morning, yes, Commissioners. So I have a bunch of job descriptions for you. Some of them are a result of the budget changes, and some of them are just some updates. The first one is in the juvenile department. So they have a juvenile teacher that is a new position as of last year's budget, and initially it was worded as a teacher, but in working with District 7 School District, we determined that term teacher and the words associated with it really isn't what the job is doing. It's coordinating what District 7 teachers do in the facilitation of their education, but it's not actually doing the teaching itself. So there's some pretty comprehensive revisions to it, but basically it comes down to it coordinates the education. It doesn't actually administer the education. And so that's what the changes are a result of.
You seen these?
Nope. Didn't know it was coming.
So this is in the shelter itself?
Mm-hmm.
So they're not a teacher in the shelter?
Well, there's a teaching coordinator that facilitates the education, but it doesn't actually administer the education. So the District 7 highly qualified teacher is the one who actually does the teaching. Some of it is done remotely, and then some of it is done in-house at District 7 facilities, depending upon the nature of what the student needs.
So this is just that person that oversees the teachers?
It doesn't oversee the teacher. District 7 administration oversees the teacher. This person coordinates what District 7 does and what the shelter does.
It's basically the organizer.
Yeah.
What is getting taught when, what's needed based on what students come in. So a youth may come in and have a different teaching need than somebody else that was in there. So they coordinate with the school district. Okay, this one's shy on these credits, or this one needs those credits. So they coordinate that.
Yeah, but basically the term teacher...
This is exactly what Dan loves.
Yeah, the term teacher, as it relates to...
What it's like.
Like the average person on the street, when they say teacher, they'd go, yeah, this is a teacher. But according to District 7, what they mean when they say the word teacher means something different. Because it means you're highly qualified, you have your teaching license... You're legally authorized to instruct per the regulations. They didn't like that we used that terminology. They asked us to change it, and so that's why that job description changed.
And we've had this position for a long time?
We used to have it in the past when the shelter was open.
5 years. So.
No, it's a year.
Yeah. Okay.
But the shelter didn't open until, a few months ago?
Yeah, so basically since January.
Yeah. Before I cut JJ off, we used to have this position. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think the thing to remember is the shelter and the detention side of the youth, it's highly regulated. I mean, I don't know that this one is specifically a regulation of the state. This is more of like a keeping it consistent with District 7's understanding of what this position ought to reflect. And so I think that's what that comes from. But there's probably little discretion in some of these things. This one we might have,
but there's no room to... You have to have this position, but... How you structure
but it's,
can change.
The teachers don't want them to be considered a teacher because they're not teaching.
And they don't have to have a teaching license. They're not highly qualified teachers. They coordinate the education that District 7 does.
What do they have to have?
Well, they need to have it. They need to have a degree. They need to have some experience in it, but they don't have to have a license.
Okay.
So they still are doing education services, but not actual teaching as defined under District 7. All right, so the next position is the Web and Public Information Coordinator. So this is a new position for the budget. It'll be housed in technology, but work with all of the departments. And I've worked with our technology director on crafting this position. This will be basically coordinating the dissemination of the various department messages through our various technological methods. So social media, our website, a number of different ways. So the purpose of this job is to really help us to do a better job of telling our story in the various departments.
This position doesn't have any, it's public information coordinator, but mm-hmm. It's not a public information officer, like somebody that when...
They're available to assist us in our dissemination of public information.
Are they going to come to the meetings and head off the girl from Channel 5 when she's...
No. Well, if we ask them to, but quite frankly, we have said that we want to be the face.
Yeah, I'm fine, but I didn't know what...
That's why we titled it a little different. If you title it Public Information Officer, that means a certain set
that's
of expectations that this position isn't really doing. This position is more of a webmaster than a true PIO. It does coordinator message, but it doesn't. It is not the public face of the county. It's not the place the media go to for information.
And helping the county get consistent messaging out, helping that the
get the message to the county out.
Yeah.
Okay.
One of the challenges we have is we don't have the staff necessary to have a consistent message in our various different web presences for the departments, and this position is going to help facilitate that.
Do we have this person yet?
Not yet, because it's approved through this budget, so we don't have authorization to fill it until July 1st.
Budget comes first, and this, then you hire. You advertise with this.
Okay.
I don't know that this description, have you seen this before, Commissioner Morgan? I'm sure you've been talking.
I saw a draft.
I don't feel like it's comprehensive enough. It feels very narrow. And I'm not really sure what the phrase, the number under essential duties and responsibilities, would be that you would add right here off the fly. But there's, I think that in our discussions about, I don't know. I think this is going to satisfy, but there's this other duties as assigned number 8. It's going to morph, and we'll change it, if we need to over time.
Brand new positions inherently. I mean, look at the teacher position. We had it for a year and went, well, it turns out we need to do some duties, so we changed it.
Yeah.
That might be the case with this one.
Totally
it's a new position.
So,
we haven't had it before.
I think it'll morph into as we discover what we need.
Yeah. But this is a good starting place, and if it turns out the board says we really need A, B, and C, then we can change that.
I think that
if you want to change it now, we can.
It's going to be really good. I think when I speak at a weekly business session or before the media, to choose the words I use very carefully. Like yesterday, talking about a jail cap and then a population. There are two different things. About where the population is going to be and where the jail cap is. Jail cap should move once a year. It's like setting up feet. You should know that what the jail cap capacity is when you pass the budget.
You have to plan and staff for
yeah,
a cap.
Yeah, the budget
you don't have to have
is capped.
The inmate, the population.
I feel like, when we use some of these phraseologies, we've got to get it right. Because if we are not consistent, and maybe having somebody who is a PIO included in these kinds of things as it morphs over time, would be really positive to having that person like really dialed in on what these things, so the phraseology is right. I know that my stuff with ONC, sustained yield, is different than sustainable yield. And it's easy to get one or the other, but the people who are in the industry, their light goes off the second you deviate from some of these little nuances that take time. I don't know if you're going to find somebody who can come up to speed on that. 26 different programs or whatever we have that's going to have it all dialed in of what to say, what not to say.
But when you put this out there and you do get somebody, you don't know who you're going to get. You might get somebody that's going to take that horse and run with it.
And yeah, and go.
You don't say, well, gee, I could do this and this and this. I see a need. I can go from there. But
there's
you got to start somewhere.
There's a few people that are out there that kind of know a lot of these things, I'd say. Funny, Michelle Binker, she's been following county government stuff for a while, and she's working for Carl Wilson. I don't know that she'd be interested in something like this, but at the same time, she's got the phraseology down. When I have something I'm putting up, I have her review it, and I have Pat review it, and they, so that's really helpful. Somebody's got that background. That's going to be tough to find if we want more to that, or they just get it on the job one more time.
Well, and it's also something that the commissioners can weigh in, and it depends on how much money you want to spend. So one of the things that one of the agencies we've reached out to, there's a whole gamut of services they provide, from a basic to a very comprehensive. And in the comprehensive version, they go as far as creating an internal, in the intranet, a question guide for all county staff. Okay, if you have somebody that's inside the county asking the question about this, and here, and it almost gives you a grid.
Yeah.
And this is the answers. And then if, all right, and speaking with the public, this is where you send them, this is what the answers, and
yeah.
it's kind of pre-designed that you have a you have the answers designated for the sake of consistent messaging. And that was a route that was more expensive than we as a group thought was worth.
You bring up
exploring.
A really interesting point about somebody watching our BCC inbox from a standpoint of coordinating communication. So that, you know, there's been people who say, nobody responded. Well, I thought you were going to respond. Well, I thought you were going to respond. You know, and we don't necessarily have a chance to talk about every email that comes in, but maybe having somebody who can, you know, those are hot button issues that are coming into our inbox. That could be another duties as assigned as it develops. And it says in here, helping the county communicate or whatever that would be. But I can see that being a real positive addition, kind of solving some of the concerns that you've had about who checks the mail and who's doing these responses and stuff. Because I think that there's going to be a front-loading of this position that's going to get things kind of in the works and deal, and then what are they going to do? You know?
Well, and honestly, the web messaging and the consistency, I mean, that's a piece of it, but the other is making sure that it's not just
stale.
Yes, and it's not going to just be the website. It's and the social media aspect
right.
of getting the messaging out. And at the different age groups that you try to target, who's on Facebook versus Snapchat or some of the other ones. And
okay, sounds good.
Okay, this is a good starting point, I think.
Mm-hmm. What's the salary range?
NU 13.
Nothing.
That tops out at around 57, I think, somewhere in there.
Is that what our comparable or?
It's a fairly unique position. So we looked at it. What is the technological skills of it compared to some of our internal stuff? And then I did look at there's a few counties that do have a full PIO, which is a little higher than this.
Yeah.
And so I kind of compared those two.
Okay.
So that's kind of how I came up with that range.
Well, I think providing like a pretty good range, you know, would be ideal so that we cast a broad net and don't, you know, go down, you know, don't get anybody. Michelle Pinker might be really good for this position someday or something. And I don't want to say that might be a little below her skill level.
Well, and I'm just thinking that if comparables of PIOs otherwise, that is something that should probably be looked at a little more closely.
Yeah, let's just make sure that it's dialed in. But otherwise, you know, it's fine.
Because that is a bigger function that they're doing.
Do PIOs do this function and public information?
Sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
There's some PIOs that don't do any of this. They just do get in front of the mic style and follow stuff. But
that's
I think those are larger municipalities like Clackamas County. They have probably a couple PIOs that just do get in front of the mic.
Right.
Yeah.
They don't do web presence style stuff. So we're looking for a jack of all trades and paying them. Well, that's what we do here, so
that's fine. All right, so next is an update to the transit operations supervisor position. So, again, this was a position that was put in place, I think, 2 years ago, something like that, maybe 3 years ago. And Scott just wanted to look at it and do a few updates. Some of them are not, unfortunately, noted in red because he didn't put his stuff in track changes, but the big changes are just putting really what we do. It was a generalized position initially, and it's more specific to our transit. And then also, in looking at the job duties, it was a non-exempt position, and it really is doing exempt-level work, so it's changing it to an exempt position.
Great.
And that actually facilitates the ability to do her job a little easier. A lot of what she does is...
Just check the numbering on the back. It's off.
It's a little wonky. Oh, that's just when you accept it, it'll automatically fix that.
Okay.
Yeah. a lot of what she does is coordinating schedules when people call in sick, and so she has to take calls in the, you know, 3-4 in the morning, get a hold of people, and it's a lot easier to do that as an exempt employee than as a non-exempt employee. Similarly, the next position is the animal shelter supervisor. Yeah.
Do you have any questions on the transit supervisor?
No, Scott's got his program on the percentile then.
Yeah, there's a handful of changes that we've made to this position as well. Not a ton. Turning it into an exempt from a non-exempt position. And shelter supervisor really runs the shelter fairly autonomously. I mean, they have oversight from the public health director, but she is really an exempt employee. She's running the day-to-day operations, looking at strategic plans, looking at her budget.
Those kinds of things don't merit what you just said. It equates to keeping the director of the development of public relations and educational materials and programs. Who's doing that if that person isn't doing it, and why isn't that person doing it? It's the director of the shelter. If they're familiar with the budgets and everything else, those are the people who should be directing the development of the public relations campaign. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Where are you looking?
It's the first strike on the second page.
Below. Okay, the second one.
No, the first one. Directs.
Oh, because there's one up here, too.
Yeah, but that's not the full. That's fine. It's the full.
Well, that's... I mean, they have oversight.
Where does it go?
Well, they... I thought that level was more the oversight of what... Director Weber does. What I did is I said, hey, what things are you really not doing? And that was one that they said, well, we don't really. She's more day-to-day operational than long-term.
She doesn't handle special problems with private systems.
She absolutely does both of those things. And including, if you go to the website, she's on there with a video telling what they do at the shelter.
Well, the reason that one was stroking because it's addressed in another place.
It's redundant. That's fine.
Okay. And they do still coordinate with the director, but a lot of what she was doing is completely supervisory.
Maybe change that to coordinate with the director or coordinate, something like that. It may not direct, but she definitely plays a role. I don't want to micromanage.
And all of them, and handling the special issues, of course she's going to relay with Mike Weber and relate to him, but she's still...
All I want you to do is sign off on this. I don't really... I mean, I care, but you need to have
it. For me, it was... that absolutely she needed to be listed as a supervisor.
Right.
She's dealing with the direct supervision of the people, and everything has to be related to someone else to take. Yeah.
And what I did is I sent this both to her and to Director Weber and said, you know, what do you think? And they made a couple of the suggestions, and then I made a few. And so it's all...
I'm good with it as long as Mr. Morgan's good with it.
We took care of that one. Facilities, next.
This has been a long time in the making for Ryan to have a more tiered structure in his ability to manage the multiple projects that he has going on.
Yeah, so basically, currently we just have one job description for building maintenance worker, and... what he would like to do is encourage his staff to have more comprehensive skills, which would allow us to save some money and not have to contract out some stuff. So the difference between a 1, 2, and 3 is you know, a 1 is your basic worker. You have a lot of variety of skills. Once you get to level 2, you have more journeyman-level skills at some specific things. And in order to have 3, you need to be certified as a certified electrician, certified... journeyman plumber, asbestos abatement. So those are some specialty skills. He doesn't currently
who
have any.
Who makes that determination and who makes that level?
It's based on the director.
Is there a test we're going to give to go from A to B?
I mean, it has clear delineation. In order to qualify, you have to be certified. You have to have certain.
That's for the top one. I get that.
Even the number 2.
You got to have a refrigerant handling license or something of that sort. I get all of that.
I don't see the difference between 2 and 3.
What's that?
I don't see the difference between 2 and 3.
The big difference...
It says the 3 oversees the 2s, but there's no other difference in their title. And below, maintenance workers 2 and 3 must have the same level of stuff. So it would just seem that...
The biggest difference falls under certifications. So under certifications for 3, you have to be a licensed certified in 2 of the 3 following areas. HVAC refrigerant handler's card, limited maintenance electrical license, low voltage electrician, asbestos abatement, and journeyman plumber. So those are all specialty fields that you have to be licensed in, and so you have to be licensed in 2 of those fields to qualify for a 3. And that's the primary difference.
This is kind of reflective of what we have in this, public works. There's an opportunity to cultivate, hiring somebody at a 1 to be able to move them up and kind of build those skills and figure out, is this a good fit without hiring a 3 and saying, wow, this isn't working out. And then you've got to really go out and find another 3, which could be a lot more challenging than finding probably the portfolio of people at that first level is broader. And that's what he's trying to do, is cultivate and have some sort of upward mobility. Right now, there's nowhere to go but his job next. And that's not...
No, I actually like the tiered, and I like that you get more certifications to get there. This one line under qualifications, maintenance worker 2 and 3, has them, that entire thing, the same. But it's almost that you need to break out the first sentence from the second sentence for 2 and 3, because then that'll be consistent with your certifications. And that line, they...
Do it separately in each one of them?
Well, like maintenance worker 2 has all the knowledge, skills, and abilities of maintenance worker 1 at an advanced level. Does 2 also need to perform the 2 areas at journeyman level, or is that just a 3 as listed over here with the certifications?
I think it's just a 3.
So that's the part I'm saying, is this second part seemed like that applied only to 3. It's just lumping them both together. So that's what I was trying to say.
Yeah, and in looking at what Ryan really wanted for his 3, he wanted to have... some people that really, they're licensed electricians or licensed,
So
that was really the primary
difference.
So delineate
the 2 in that line that they're different,
then you'd be good.
And then you're fine.
Okay, yeah.
I'll see right there.
What if you get a guy that is there any time and rate type thing that says you've got to be a 2 for 4 years before you can apply for a 3?
It's all at Ryan's discretion.
There is a little bit in you need to have 2 years experience to just qualify for the job at all. You need to have 4 years experience to qualify for a 2 and 6 years experience to qualify for a 3.
Okay.
So it is a mixture of time and certifications.
And if a guy's a 2 and he wants to study to be a 3, do we pay for all of his education?
If we think that it's something we want him to do for the job, then typically we would pay for that. Typically what we do if someone does just personal advancement training, that's on them. But if they're doing training to benefit the business, then that's usually on us.
Well, there's a certain amount of upkeep you have to do on, like, limited electrical license and all that.
Well, we pay for some of the hours of stuff in legal and building and safety as those, continuing education kind of deals.
Yeah.
And move up to those other levels so that they can inspect... broader portfolio. We have paid for those.
And it's pretty normal. Like in road workers, we usually hire, we almost exclusively hire road worker 1s, and most of them do not have a CDL, and we pay for the totality of their training to get them a CDL and then to get them a ability to operate a grader and whatever. And, there's a bunch of trainings they do in order to get all the way up to road worker 4 and coordinator.
Okay. So. Any other questions on that?
Well, I think we should probably put in a certified nuisance rodent something or whatever.
Absolutely. Pest control.
Vector control.
Right. Yes.
Vector control 1 and vector controller 2.
Everybody needs to be certified
yes.
to do that.
And
vector controller 3.
These are the rules.
This should be a basic level certification.
I want ninja rat killers.
Ninja.
I'll include that. Ninja rat
killers. American ninja rat killers. Okay.
All right. The last one is, again, a new position for this year's budget. And that is for a lead dispatcher. It's a brand new position.
Too bad we don't have anybody on the board who knows anything about that. Real shallow.
Well,
yes.
They did that
finally.
So
finally, there's.
Sorry, I said a lot. You know, it's.
Well, we got a new person coming in February, maybe, or January, maybe they'll have some doctor.
So this is, basically someone to act as a lead worker. So it's a working supervisor position within the dispatch unit in the sheriff's office.
They had one when they started their own dispatch.
Yeah.
Debbie Hamlin was that position.
Mm-hmm.
And then she went off. We brought in the EIS computer system for the new dispatch.
Mm-hmm.
And she went through all their training to learn how to train the county in that. And then that company hired her out from us. And so
did they reimburse us for the training?
Well, she trained all of us. But, anyhow, it's one of those things that this is a position that we had when we started our dispatch center.
Yeah. So it's a real valuable position, but we haven't had it, mostly due to budgetary over the last 4 years. But it's a real important aspect because there's some specific technical skills that dispatchers need, and it's great to have an in-house supervisor that is proficient in those skills. It's harder to get proper technical oversight from a sergeant or something because it's just not what they do. And that's it.
Mr. Morgan has no questions on it.
I don't either.
Yeah, jeez.
Okay. That was a lot.
She's silent. Okay.
Hey, count your blessings.
Jeff, tell us, boys.
Yeah, that's it.
We all talked last night. Like, I was like, really? Do we want to just go to the admin agenda? I mean, we're going to be here till Thursday. It was intense. You guys were in rare form.
We were. You're the one that did all the talking.
Virtually nothing.
Virtually has the
virtually
relative.
Put your goggles on, bro. You were right there.
I'm gonna have the staff time it.
Right.
How much? Yeah, that was pretty fun.
Thank you, JJ.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Item number two: finance report and business update. Arthur O'Hare, administrative policy.
JJ,
regarding,
can you stay for a second?
Yeah.
Management of federal funding. Move forward to admin.
Can you talk about that issue, Arthur, first that I brought up, I think, yesterday? I just want to make sure that we're being conscious. Okay, so one of the elements that came out about the budget last night that's an incredible positive, and every program has really been doubling down on this effort for the last 8 years or so to improve our reserves, mm-hmm. our ending fund balances, and making sure we've got an adequate amount, a minimally adequate. Before, we were sub standard as far as our days in operation used to be something that our previous auditor would give us. You have 88 days, which is one of the things that I remember. So you could function without any kind of new revenue for 88 days. Which
if
is
everything stopped tomorrow, you could keep the building open.
That's not
for
even 3 months. It's close, but it's not quite. We should have a year in operations. Our goal should be 365 days with an interruption in revenues. And I think we're getting closer to that goal. That's not a $6.5 million reserve. It's probably closer to a $10 million. But taking advantage of the positive that we've done, and I've talked to both separately, I don't think together, JJ and Arthur, about evaluating our minimum out-of-pocket insurance rates. I know that Klamath County just did this. It's kind of like going through your auto insurance, and instead of having $100 deductible on your claim, you know what? I'm in a better fiscal position. I can do 5. And you actually save money because your premium goes down. I think our premiums went up somewhere around the 10%-ish thing, which is actually pretty good relative to some of the other counties that I've talked to and their administrators. And so it's not bad, but I'd like to make us I'd like to take a strategic opportunity, and it may have passed already. And I think you looked at this, JJ, but we didn't have like a board discussion about, well, what do we feel comfortable about our minimum out of pocket? I think some of ours are 10,000, and some of them are 5 or 1,000. We used to be self-insured. There was a time, probably 15 years ago, we will always have catastrophic, and that was that traveler insurance. Well, it was something before then, but over 500,000 or a million, you can set that rate, and you just anything over that, and then you tap that insurance. So I think this is an ongoing discussion, but I want to start it now in case I get hit by a bus or whatever, that we make sure we're looking at those reserves that we built up is a positive, and you can utilize those.
I'd like an assessment of where we stand as far as claims go. Before you go out and try to shop around to get a better rate, you better make sure your house is in order and that you don't have a bunch of claims, you know, dating back for 10 years. I keep, my own personal is that I pay for my own broken windshields.
Yep.
I pay for my own scratches and parking lot dents and whatnot.
We're real
but
good.
When I go to shop my insurance, they say, why do we want you, Mr. DeYoung? And I just say, there's my record. They go, sign him up.
Yep.
What do we have to do to get him on board?
Right.
And
we're in that position right
okay,
now.
That's what I was, you know, I didn't know what the assessment was.
We're real
was.
Solid. We had a couple out there that would have been game changers.
You can't not have
they're
a
okay.
couple
they're,
with
they've kind of fizzled out and come to a pretty positive conclusion.
So I have a great answer for that. I met with basically the head finance guy for CIS and talked about what are the best options. And really what you're talking about is an individual deductible on an individual claim. And there's another option that CIS has that a lot of folks...
policy.
Well, we already have that. But there's a secondary way to assume risk that will save us some money. And that is you look at the totality of your claims... And if you have basically a good track record, then you pay less. And if you have a bad track record, you pay more. So you assume some of that risk. And there's a number of different structures to that type of a plan. But ultimately, with workers' comp coverage, we'd lose money in that deal. But with general liability, we would save money in that deal. And so that is what I'm going to recommend with our renewals is to switch from the current structure, which is just... You pay what you pay based on what your rate is, to a let's assume some of the risk, but we can save some money assuming we keep the track record that we've had.
Now I'll go from workman's comp because I got cut pretty hard by them. But I went on to a program where I, as the employer, decided what I was going to pay, what I wanted, what I wasn't going to pay. In other words, if I got a worker hurt out in the shop, and I just took a look at it and I said, let's go get you some stitches and immediate care. I paid for that. Mm-hmm. If you took him to emergency room because you don't have that option, the first question they ask is, did you ever get hurt on the job? And they go, yep, well, let's get this guy a room. And if there's a vast difference on whether you're going to pay for it yourself, out of pocket, I'm going to write a check today for it. Oh, well, great. Well, let's stitch him up. We're going to put a little bit in there and, you know, for a return visit, make sure there's no infection, and you're happily on your way. And I made a deal with the insurance company. This is when I had a 2.23 fairness mod, so that was way up there. I was about as high a risk as you're going to get. And the insurance company jumped at that. They said, do you want to pay for some of this stuff? I said, I don't even want to start down the comp claim road if I can just
handle it.
He's not hurt that bad. He didn't lop off his trigger finger. It's a scratch, and you're in a sheet metal shop, you're going to get that. So I would take care of those in-house. I had the ability, if I had a ceiling of like $500 or $750, whatever we negotiated, I want to pay. If it's under $1,000, I want to pay, and you've never even seen
that's,
it.
That's what I think you're recommending. Right?
I did talk to them about that specific type of thing, and CIS allows it. It's a new program they didn't used to allow. Starting next year, they're going to allow a structure like that, and that will basically get your mod is based on what's the total cost and then how many claims, and that gets the cheap claims off of the books.
Right.
And so that's something
what I would like to do.
And so that's something that we're going to do.
I agree. But why don't you bring it all to us? Because we have not, as a group, weighed in on any of our insurance coverage or services since we've been in office the last year. So before we renew, bring all the options to us. Let's review it all.
What is that time of renewal? I don't know if you've been
I'm working on it right now, so I'll have it done hopefully by the end of the week. So we'll have, you know, a lot of it's just inputting. You have to get the LB1s completed before you can input them, and those get done. I think they were done a few days ago, but there's a couple adjustments.
Well, we have to wait till we have the adopted.
Yeah.
You know, to get the real. Numbers.
I just wanted to bring this to the board as something that I think is important. It came to me probably a couple of months ago, and you'd probably been working on it ahead of time, but then I got revisited by three commissioners up at AOC on Monday about their rates and stuff, and I said, oh, that's right, I'd asked, and we've got progress being made on that. But
I think you brought it to our attention several months back. Yeah. It seems like quite a while back. JJ and I have talked about it several times over the period here, but, you know.
I'll give you an example of things that you don't even look at until your back's against the wall. I had a sheet metal guy that got a cut. He cut his hand. He cut it pretty good, and they stitched it up. It was on workman's comp. And when it came time for my renewal, I had all these claims, and they were some biggies. And I said, wait a minute, what is this here for Rob? What's with the $28,000 in reserve for Rob? I said, it was a cut on the back of his hand. They said, well, we don't know if that's going to get infected. And if it gets infected, what if he gets staph infection? What if? Well, they put all of that reserve as if I claimed it. I said, then why don't you give me the $28,000? I'll put it in my bank account, and if it doesn't come in, I'll pay you back in a year. But you're basing my premiums on something that never happened, on the what ifs. And there was three of them on there. It was unbelievable, the difference in the premiums when they took that off. I said, we're going real time here. Yeah. Rob, do you have an infection? Nope. Are you going to get infected? Doesn't look like it to me. Everything's working good. And why it stayed on there. So that's something you might, after my own personal experience, whether they're doing that to the county or not, I don't know, on claims. But if they haven't closed that claim off in a given amount of time, in a reasonable amount of time, you've got a reserve in there. Mm-hmm. And that's what they're basing your premium on. Mine, anyway. So. But I think
great. I just wanted us to be strategic about the reserves that we've built up and the fiscal situation that we're in. We can take advantage. Before, we didn't have, you know, like the cushion in any of these budgets to be able to kind of, you know, take care of those first dollars.
Back up against the wall.
Yeah. But now I think we're in a position where we can, and we should take advantage of it. So thank you very much. Yeah. This is great to hear progress is in the queue. And I think that's going to be really positive. You guys worked a couple years ago. Well, and I think it was a combination of things. But our insurance rate went down, you know, significantly in 1 year. We saved over $400,000 by things that you guys put into place. And that's not chump change. You know, when you're running this kind of an operation, we should be looking for those and not doing them a year after, you know, you could have done that last year or whatever. This is the year I think we can make that argument. So.
Commissioner Morgan asked for an assessment, I think, is what you would like to see.
I would like the option to be brought to us so that we can look at all of them and decide which is the best package for us.
Yep.
And there's basically two or three different levels of risk that we can assume with a general liability. I would definitely not recommend it with workers' comp. We'd lose money if we took that structure with workers' comp, but with general liability, we could save some money.
Do you feel lucky?
I agree.
Do you feel lucky?
Never get rid of your balloon coverage. That stuff is worth its weight.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay.
Do we carry umbrellas or anything? Is that?
They're red. Cool travelers.
Never mind. Let's just move on.
Let's move on. Okay. So,
finance report. Arthur.
We had to use umbrellas for the graduation Friday night.
So just, we once again got our financial report, excellence in financial reporting. So that came out for last year's financial report. But they get around to it eventually. So we just got that the last week.
Well, they take their time. They do their diligence.
They do. They study it very diligently. Exactly. Details. So, and then as far as just for your information, I did talk with a reporter from the Oregonian yesterday. He called. I didn't call him. And Ted Sickinger. Anyway, he writes about PERS. He's done other articles. I looked it up about PERS. And I think he had...
Did you read your press release?
They're going to have an article, I think. They're going to have an article that's going to probably claim that Josephine County has the highest PERS rate of the counties in Oregon. Technically, Douglas County and Coos County have higher rates. But if you add our PERS bond, and I don't know if Douglas and Coos has a PERS liability bond.
I think
that
Douglas does.
Yeah, but somehow... The Oregonian, in their rate calculator machine, figured out that Josephine County was the highest, and so they wanted to call and confirm. I tried to dig into it, ask them, you know, on what basis you're allocating your bond. I mean, the PERS rate for Salem is the PERS rate. That's it. And we're number three. We're not number one in the counties, among the counties. And their cities and
are they talking about the unfunded liability?
They're talking about our annual, as a percentage of payroll.
Yes.
That's what they ended up doing. And so they were basing it on a $15 million payroll that was back in 15-16. This is what I found out as I was talking to him about it. And our payroll for this coming budget year is $22 million. So he was spreading a PERS liability over a smaller base, which creates a larger percentage. So he's going to take that same liability over a significantly larger base, 15 to 22.
That's a third more.
Yeah. So that should, but...
But he has a story to write.
I know.
That's exactly it. And
he's
got
to find something in there.
Insert name. I've got the headline. I need the name to attach to the headline.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it might be Josephine County. That's what I'm...
It might be advantageous for you to put that press release together about how we've done a diligent job of managing our PERS unfunded liability. And Arthur and Rosemary brings up a point, deserve a lot of the credit of the forethought about where we were going fiscally and where we wanted to be in the future, where we are right now. And we plan for it. It's not something that is just this albatross that's taking 50% of our payroll because we didn't plan for it.
Right, and I told him,
but we're dealing with it.
I told him that, and I said, frankly, it's a cost of doing business. I'm not going to argue it's a small number. It's a big number.
Yeah.
PERS is a big number. We spend more in medical insurance benefit than we do in PERS. So is PERS going to, it's not going to...
We kept our medical benefits. I mean, if you go to Deschutes,
we do
County,
better.
It's $1,600 an employee, and that's like the average. Yeah. Ours is $1,000.
We've done much better than...
Good luck with that, other counties. You can't even... So, I don't know.
So the PERS rate, I don't know what the Oregonian's going to publish, but they're...
Nobody reads
might
it anyway.
Yeah.
It's going to hit us all over Facebook and emails.
Brings up a point of... I was thinking about it this morning. I'd like to have the board, in conjunction with passing this budget... this is no small measure about the fiscal stability of what we've achieved in the last... 8 years since that deduction, 7 years ago. Mm-hmm. A lot of those elements Rosemary deserves credit for, and I think it would be, you know, a very worthy but small gesture to send her a thank you note and maybe flowers or something about it. Wouldn't really, you know, the combination of Arthur and Rosemary got us here. And the staff sacrifices and all the things that we put in place.
Arthur, are you going to feel bad if we don't send you flowers?
We already thank Arthur.
I already feel bad. I don't need
it. We already thank Arthur, but it would have been better, but he didn't figure that out. So, just a card.
A lot of that stuff is just stuff that goes on behind the scenes that they never hear about.
Right.
That things are getting better in the courthouse, but they still
that's what
I don't know about.
Quasi-PIO will do.
Yeah, they
don't know
about
it. We only had a PIO.
So. But if you guys are receptive to that, I think, you know, all four of us would like to sign that.
Okay.
And we'll work on that.
I didn't know Rosemary, so it's before my time, but...
But you're experiencing the benefits of her work.
But I'm experiencing the benefits of her work.
I think there's a lot of people that came before, and they feel like they just sacrificed and did all this thing, and then nobody cares about their the work that they did. Like, there's some good things.
Yeah.
So...
Policies. Yep.
You get done with the cruise. So, you never thank the captain, but you sure thank the bartender.
So you're saying it's the rate that we're paying to PERS is higher than anyone else?
That's what that was the headline that he was
not
pushing
for. Not the debt
that
we owe, but
correct.
The rate that we're paying.
Correct.
Percentage of
correct. As a percent of our payroll.
Yeah.
That's because we pay nobody.
Well, there's a lot of things, and we can go into why this is the way it is.
I was just giving you hopefully fair warning that there might be something coming out, and I'm not
Arthur
sure.
Arthur and I talked about 2 months ago about putting together a press release.
Prefers.
Some
positive press release.
Yeah. Well,
to overcome something. When this comes out, they go, well, gee, we just had a press release. The county's not in that bad of shape. Where'd this guy get his number?
But, yeah, and we could do that. I think what maybe you were part of that when I did a budget presentation that because it was Paul Walters and his Fred Starkey reporter saying, you know, making a wild claim that for every $100 of revenue that the citizen gives to the county, $21 will be spent on PERS. That's a false claim. It's just false. And I went through the math you know, to show that the reality is if you give us $100 of revenue to be spent on a program, even at the very highest rate, which would be the sheriff, police and fire rate, at a tier one, tier two, that was about $7.50 of that 100 would actually be going up to PERS. So it's they get
it's still a lot of money.
Well, $7.50 of $100 is a big number. I'm not going to, you know, argue that it's not a big number or that PERS is
for accuracy.
Yeah, but let's be accurate. Yeah, it's not 21 bucks.
Yeah. It's never going to be higher than that.
Correct. And actually, we are down to about 75% of our payroll is now OFSERP, the newest version, and about 25% of our people are in the older tier one, tier two. So that, you know, the ratio
is
swinging.
But those are paused anyhow. Only new payments go into whatever the IAP is. So even if you're tier one or tier two, there's nothing new going into those. It's only going into the
IAP.
Correct.
Yeah. But there's still a big liability that's associated with the old PERS programs that's being allocated among our
part of the need for these press releases to dispel the rumors, but also to give the public the understanding that this board is actively seeking alternative measures for long-time retirement plans that are not PERS based. And Arthur and JJ have been leaning
kind of weaning our way off of the PERS.
We want to petition the state to be a pilot opportunity, and maybe we galvanize this headline, this issue, into legislation to provide this. Look, we're blah blah blah. Maybe we're not, but whatever.
Take advantage of it.
You know, make a negative into a positive, and say, hey, get us out. You know, let's look at a long-term trajectory of reducing our PERS unfunded liability, and doing a defined comp. You know, plan like the board just approved, the budget committee did. So that's really the how it all works out in a strategy that, you know, the board in 10 years, we're not incurring any more PERS debt. You know, there's a light at that end of the tunnel that we're out.
It's like a mortgage. Eventually it will get paid off, but it's not going to be in the next, we can't cash it out right now. No.
Yeah, well, not the PERS.
Start thinking about it.
Yeah. And our PERS bond is 5 years. So in 5 years, the PERS bond will be paid off. So that will also make a pretty good decrease to the payroll liability. But I, for example, I looked at one of our, you know, kind of a middle-of-the-road employee. We pay more in medical benefit in the, you know, not quite twice, but, you know, a third more in medical than we do in PERS. So PERS is significant, but certainly not the most significant
cost. Yeah, if you want to look at reducing costs, you're dealing over here. Really should be focused over here.
So one final thing. Our auditor, the federal government is saying that every municipality should have a policy that basically says that if we get federal funding, we will follow federal rules. It kind of seems redundant, since when we sign a grant or accept federal money, we already sign a contract that says we're going to follow, you know, federal rules.
It comes with every contract, doesn't it?
It does.
Byline in every contract?
It does. But the feds say that we should also have a policy in place, and our auditor said we should have a policy in place. So I am proposing a one-page policy. I didn't get it in time to actually include it in your packet, but it's a policy that says it's our policy to administer all federal funding in accordance with the federal award requirements and regulations.
Okay.
So what I'm not sure exactly And if we don't, then we won't be in compliance with the federal guidelines, I guess, because one of the federal guidelines that we say we're going to follow is that we'll have a policy that says we're going to follow the federal guidelines.
And there's 250 federal employees that are going to read that and check the box and say they've read it and it's in line.
What I'd like to do is to have the board say, delegate to the chair the review and acceptance of this policy. Very important. Policy to review and accept.
The only challenge is there's a lot of times in Title III funding, federal agencies didn't know what the rules were. And so, I mean, you could ask them. You know, we asked Rocky, we asked Kevin from the ONC Association. AOC pays ONC, Rocky, to administer the Title II and Title III funding application because nobody really knows. There's nobody at the Department of Interior, hardly. We're telling them this is what these rules are because they've been going on and morphing for 30 years. There's a lawsuit that we're going to likely join because the Department of Interior didn't appropriate the right amount and administer, you know, stuff the right way from 14, 15, and 16. Doesn't mean a lot of money for us, maybe a few thousand dollars, but it's just an example of, yeah, sure, we'll comply when you know the rules. But anyway, I think we can sign it. Or we don't need to do this at WBS if you guys are comfortable with it. It's a standard operating procedure.
It's so just an internal
housekeeping. Chair DeYoung to sign on behalf of the board on this federal compliance policy for the county.
I'll second.
Moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you.
Yep. Yep.
Still trying to swallow my tea, guys.
Get her a hat.
The tea swallow is an affirmative.
He was nodding. He was nodding yes. That is everything I have.
That you get your comment.
Okay, good. That is everything I have.
You bring it over well.
Any
other questions for Arthur?
Strategy for making the... When is the discussion for the supplemental budget about... the road dollars, the Secure Rural Schools funding, and then a couple of things that I think we tangentially talked about is CASA encouraging that program to be coming back into the fold. And there's just a handful of little, well, they're not little things, but they,
yeah.
I think we need to address them. I think the public is looking for, so what are you going to do with this? And just starting the discussion about what's an outline for the possibilities. I think maybe it starts with the board giving direction to the programs of, you know, don't assume. Yes, we've always dedicated Secure Rural Schools fundings to the law enforcement programs. But is there any special emphasis, not liaison to anything but, I guess, the DA now, but what are those things that make the whole system work? You can't just appropriate all this stuff to the DA. And where are those deficiencies in the system? Feels like the jail's doing really, really well. You know, he's going to be maybe petitioning the board to increase the cap. But is it patrols? But then what do we need to do for another DA to make sure that there's a ability to prosecute those offenders? So just starting out the discussion, I like it on the calendar so we know it's coming sometime in the next month or so.
Well, I'd agree. I think it's the board right now just needs to say, let's have a Tuesday workshop, perhaps, or whatever, to initiate this discussion and get this going.
It might be easy enough to just say that we want it dedicated to law enforcement. I don't know what the but the purview of the board.
Some aspect of law enforcement.
Yeah,
we call it law enforcement in our budget, so let's keep it that way.
Yeah.
And that includes everybody, you know, DA, juvenile detention, and the sheriff's office.
So you're asking all of those people to bring in to say, you know.
Well, maybe we task them to sit down and say, you guys bring us an option.
Tell us what you think you need.
Or two.
Or
what do you think?
I think all of us have asked each of the, at least I asked my departments, what would your recommendation with this money be? Out of that, you know, we were talking with the Three River School District of their need, and that's why we had talked about a school resource officer with a prevention or treatment and a juvenile PO in each of the three county-based systems, you know, as a really big impact to trying to curb what's going on and intervene before it gets bad. The sheriff had talked about a marijuana enforcement team, and yet the applications for the grant open July 1st, and so where that's going and how that plan's coming through.
That revenue's a year or two, so I'd like to just keep it focused on, you know, what we have,
and low-hanging fruit, I guess you'd call it.
The other thing is the PILT payment's coming in this month. should be in.
But to me, I think patrol is going to be. We don't have detectives.
Right. Well, I was going to give a broader. My recommendation is a broader. You guys are the experts in your field, but I want you all sitting down together. I don't want Jim Goodman left out of the conversation. You know, as far as what he sees as the rules, the school officer. You all four need to. Well, it's really three, but. Sheriff wears two hats of jail and patrol.
Mm-hmm.
Those four elements sitting down and saying, what is your cumulative proposal? And say, let's just say you have $2 million to start with.
For how many years?
No, that's I'm not. You have $2 million. Come up with a proposal.
Okay.
My envelope says you need to make this that stretch for 3 or 4 years. But I don't, you know, what if they say, we're just going to get it done. We're going to nip it all and do this task. I don't. They need to come up with that stuff. I don't want to set too many parameters. But you could say a multi-year funding proposal. That would be fine.
I think it should last. Just wondering, should it be LIPSIC, or are you asking a different group?
I don't know. We could assign this to LIPSIC as a place to start, or maybe those programs should make a recommendation to LIPSIC.
But LIPSIC has, you know, I don't see where LIPSIC would be weighing in on how the county spends their money internally. If there's money to be had that can impact the other departments and other programs that LIPSIC covers, but if it's simply an internal among our three...
We're not looking to appropriate it anywhere else. Although...
Yeah, I
would like to see a little bit, it's only like about $1,000 delta per month, dedicated to maybe a court security, not a courthouse security officer or a county security officer, that is a person in the sheriff's office who can carry a gun, detain somebody, but also could provide court security so they do, there's a woman who can do everything. Because right now, what we have and what we're paying for is not exactly what I thought we should probably have.
No, but we didn't weigh in on the contract either. It was signed without our looking at it. And when we were asked to review it, it just hasn't happened.
What is there to review?
I actually think they've done a lot of good. I think they've kept a lot of what was going on.
I'm talking
about
the
concierge. But if something happened, they could detain somebody until the police got there and arrested them.
Yeah.
For the safety of whatever's going on, they can put handcuffs on somebody and make the situation safe.
I think we could do better. And I think it wouldn't cost that much more.
Well, I think we went into it also with the understanding, let's get it started, let's see what impact it has, and then we can adjust that or, you know, finesse that as time goes on. Or do something different, you know, if you want. But it was a place to start. And I think there has been some good done out of that.
I think so, the real positive of it. And then I think, you know, for me, okay, we're spending X for a little bit more.
You could get somebody who can do
everything.
Yeah, possibly. I don't want to exclude anybody from LIPSIC, but you know, LIPSIC has public health, they have adult corrections,
to do with criminal justice and public safety.
And I don't know if we...
But it's not where we've dedicated historically.
No,
Carroll schools have always...
The state has stated that it's a local public safety coordinating council.
Right.
So if you're looking for a plan to be developed, are you just asking the three departments to develop a plan, or are you asking the local public safety coordinating council to weigh in? That's all I'm asking. I'm not recommending you do that. I'm just asking if that was what you were recommending.
Would they provide, though? I mean, what? So
quite
public
frankly,
health
it would be
would,
our people doing it anyhow. I mean, it would end up being Nate coming up with a plan. If it was LIPSIC, it would be.
What I would find that we should do strategic is to give direction to our programs that are going to be impacted by these resources, so that we've already made the determination that they're going to the historic three programs of law enforcement in the county. I don't have any problem with after they give us the recommendation that we check in with LIPSIC and say, does this seem like something that will work for your programs? How is that going to impact? Mm-hmm. I think that's diligence, and that's a function of LIPSC that should be utilized. The revenues you're talking about in the future, it will likely be mandated that be a approved program by LIPSC, but that's a different funding stream. That's mm-hmm. the marijuana stuff.
Yeah, so the marijuana.
Ours is different. Yes. But I would like them to dovetail as far as what they see that doing, and then they see what this doing. It's a complex system. I think Commissioner Morgan understands it better than anybody here. So I don't see any problem with checking multiple boxes. Ultimately, it's our decision.
Well, this is just a starting point, too.
Right.
And we get feedback from the people closest to the hub, and then if it looks good, then you take it to LIPSC and say, yeah, we've reviewed this as a board. What do you think?
They're advisory to us.
Yeah.
We don't need their approval.
No. What the clearest direction that I think this board needs to do is that those three programs need to coordinate. I don't want the sheriff working on his own silo and just doing detectives and blah, blah, blah. Those might have merit, but he needs to be sitting down with the DA and juvenile detention, so juvenile justice.
I could suggest that
you coordinate that.
Well, juveniles already come up with a recommendation. They have a plan, phase one and a phase two recommendation.
See, and the sheriff could do the same thing. I'm not interested in those siloed elements. They need to be coordinated.
But that part of that was asking for a school resource officer.
And it may work out.
Three totally. Yeah.
But I want all three programs sitting in front of us, not just the sheriff or Jim.
My only concern is I had one of those department heads, directors, elected to whatever's say that we should take all the juvenile money and give to his program because his is more important. And
but that's where all three of them need to weigh in and score the importance, because everybody thinks their program is the most important. And rightfully so.
No, they don't all feel that way. That's why this issue comes to the board. I've had Jim Goodwin give up his elements of his program before he gets to the table.
And he's not doing that here.
I've told him, I said, I never want to see that again.
Yep.
You fight for your program just the same way the DA fights for his. He's doing the right thing. We make that decision, splitting the bike, so to speak. So.
Well, I'm thinking that perhaps I could put together a compilation of what I've received from each of the departments, each of the three, and possibly then initiate a discussion to tell them, we need to get together, and
you
then
do it how you need to do it.
Yeah, and then
you're good.
Bring
this
it back to the board.
Yep.
Okay. O'Hare volunteered.
Voluntarily. Did I tell you I'm retiring?
Voluntary draft.
Put his name in the
And our supplemental budget, making the appropriation for the...
Yes, so for budget, just as a recap, on the weekly business session for next Wednesday is the approval and adoption of the budget and setting the tax rate, so for the 18-19 budget year. I will incorporate the changes that I brought to you last night. And then if there's any other issues or discussions, then we'll need to get those taken care of right away before we... But it's not the last opportunity, of course. There can be supplemental, which is the second piece here. When we're talking about the SRS funding and so on, even the marijuana funding, the costs and those aspects, that would be part of a supplemental budget process. So it's not... We adopt the budget as is, and then we can change that.
Don't we have to do a supplemental for the 2017?
17-18, yeah.
So by June?
Yes. So on what we've got scheduled is for June 27th. Is the weekly business session would be kind of what I'm calling the cleanup for the 17-18 fiscal year.
Great.
So that supplemental, I'll get that out to you hopefully within the next day or so.
Okay.
So you can see those pieces, but they're... There'll be no surprises. There'll be stuff that you've already dealt with over time, over this last year.
Anything else for Arthur?
I think that's good.
Thank you.
Thank you, Arthur. Item number three, other business. Julie Smeltzer. Dutch Brothers Enterprise Zone is what she wishes to talk about today.
And one other thing, if I can. We'll see. So, okay, so we, as you know, that Dutch Brothers is trying to take advantage of the long-term enterprise zone program. We've talked about that before.
You haven't actually mentioned it was Dutch Brothers before.
Okay, now it's public. It's out there. We had it at a city council meeting, so yes, it is Dutch Brothers. And they're looking at doing more than a $25 million investment downtown and more than 75 employees, so they qualify for the long-term enterprise zone. Originally, they were talking about 10 years. They can go up to 15. They want to do the 15 years. The way it works is it goes to city council. Let me back up. City council is going to have a special meeting on Monday to discuss the agreement between the city and Dutch Brothers. And if they approve that, it then goes to the county for us to approve the agreement. So I'm hoping that we can discuss the agreement or approve the agreement on Wednesday. But I just want to share with you the draft that's out there right now. What happened is the city, despite what the paper said, there is no request for a parking garage at this time. Here's one for Ricky. So this is just basically your standard enterprise zone agreement. And the bottom line is what it says is that...
Who drafted this? City or somebody else?
Dutch Brothers. Okay. Going back and forth with the city attorney. And I sent it over to... Now that this is the...
Why isn't Sorority doing this? And why is the city involved? It's a rural enterprise zone.
So the Sorority is the enterprise zone manager, which means they process the application. So we don't have an application yet. They're working on that. Well, I take it back. They did submit a draft application. But the agreement is one that the applicant's attorney comes up with and proposes to the city and the county. And he follows certain templates and things of that nature. So basically what this says is it's an agreement between the city and the county and Dutch Brothers. And it says we all agree that we'll give them a long-term tax abatement. And in exchange, they will have at least a $25 million investment downtown and create at least 75 full-time jobs at 150% of our wage. So our wage is 26, so they're looking
at that's for the term of 15 years. They have to maintain that?
They
have 75 employees for 5 years from now? Something, coffee beans go bad or something. And they don't have those 75. Is there a get-out clause anywhere?
I don't think so. I think they have to maintain it. I can check into that. I think they have to maintain it, and then if they don't, then they're in default of our agreement.
Does Sorority keep an eye on their...
Sorority does. Yep. Sorority and our assessor monitor that. So Sorority sends the applicant a letter every year saying, hey, you need to file your paperwork, show us how many jobs you've created, what the salary is. Then they remind them. Connie has to look at that as well, because Connie is the one who does the assessment for the...
She does the abatement or whatever.
Is the job creation in above the... does it need to be a net over the jobs lost by the displacement of the other businesses?
At the current time, we don't know if there will be any displacement of the other jobs.
That's not considered. When we did the thing up in the North Valley.
And I will say this, their proposal actually is over 200 jobs.
Sure.
And it's far over 25.
And the city's not including a parking
element? What the city, so the city could have put that in here. What the city wants to do is have that.
$25 million. I wonder where that's going to go.
So what they want to, they're actually doing closer to $50 million, I think. So, but what the city wants to do is have that as a standalone agreement, not part of this.
Right.
So that's what the city decided. They could make it part of this.
Why does the city have, I don't really understand why they have a nexus in this.
Okay, because
we're the curator of the rural enterprise zone.
Because
they would in the next version. But.
Well, right now they're a co-sponsor. So right now we have this... we're a rural enterprise zone until the end of the month. And Grants Pass is a co-sponsor with Josephine County in that rural enterprise zone.
Okay, I guess about that.
After the 30th, because now remember they did the new MPO MSA boundaries and everything.
And then we're out. They don't even need to check with us.
Well, what that means is then they're going to have their own enterprise zone program. We'll have our rural enterprise zone program. You'll be able to do a long-term one in our area. But in the city, after July 1st, you can only do a 3 to 5 year abatement program.
So they're trying to take advantage of an additional 12 years, 10 to 12 years by going in with the joint one now before the end of the month.
Correct.
That's why we're having.
Does that explain something? Does the enterprise zone, when you do that, what taxes get abated? Just property taxes? Does the school still get theirs?
Nope. It's everybody. It's all of those districts, all the taxing
all
districts,
the districts. So
that are affected by that.
Do the schools get to weigh in on this?
So what we do is, no, not at this point, but earlier on. So, you know, we just had to renew our enterprise zone program. We pulled all the districts together and said, hey, this is what we want to renew this, and we sent them a letter and some information, and they could weigh in at that point. As a matter of fact, they really don't, but it's to their benefit because, yeah, they might be abating it for 10 years, 15 years, but after that point, they've now got $25-50 million of property that's now going to be assessed going into their, you know, on the tax rolls.
In the meantime, you're having to pay for the schools, and you're not, all of a sudden now, you're not paying for the school's getting no benefit out of this $25 million upgrade.
Well, they are getting, what they get is, so let's say that property right now is worth $1.5 million. Okay?
Right.
They will continue to get the taxes off that $1.5
right.
million as if nothing has changed.
Right.
Well, they actually aren't getting that now because of the... well, yes,
they are. Where does the urban renewal come into
it's
this?
Because
that's right smack dab in the urban renewal thing,
they,
too.
They won't get anything.
They don't overlap. They won't get anything.
They do overlap, but this ends up being the better program for them. So, I mean,
for
they're...
the applicant.
Yes. So if we say no, they can still go for... they can still benefit from the urban renewal district. Or if we say no, they can come back for that short-term 3 to 5 year abatement after July 1st.
I'm 100% in favor of this. Sounds good.
Just put it clean to the numbers real quick. So if you look at just 75 jobs that they're required to put, that is almost $3 million in employee wages brought to the area.
Yeah, but it costs us money. We lose money on every employee who comes in here. That is not a selling point for a county. We cannot provide services at income tax levels for people who are, you know, they're paying 58 cents or plus 93, provide for a $2.47 widget that we sell as county services. So there's always a delta. That's not a selling point for me. The idea, though, that we were never going to get any of this revenue anyway because of the urban renewal.
Because of the urban renewal.
So
yeah.
For me, we're not losing anything. Schools are definitely losing because urban renewal, if you put it under the enterprise zone first, before the urban renewal, they get shored up from urban renewal. The state cuts them a check for the delta they would have received. We don't get that check. So we're not out anything. It's a positive element to the economy and the jobs that are created. We don't lose anything.
In comparison to the urban renewal, though, if they take... the schools, are they looking at it 15 years and saying, well, in 15 years we're done, the urban renewal is 30 years.
Right. So it'll go back on the
rolls. So it'll go back
on the
rolls.
The urban renewal will take over.
Quite a bit sooner than...
Yep.
So I guess...
so they'll get their money after 15 years and shored up by the state when it goes back on the outside of the enterprise.
And urban renewal doesn't require the job creation or the 150%.
No.
Or minimum investment. I mean, this is a
big
thing.
I bet it could. The city negotiates those urban. What are we going to invest in with this $105 million that we get? They'll pick strategic opportunities that probably reflect those things. But there isn't any requirement. Enterprise zones has a requirement to
right.
do 150% of the median wage. You have those jobs for X number of years and all that. So. It's all. I think this is a really good thing.
This is a fantastic deal for us. And as far as the wages go, we get living wage jobs. To have somebody agree to provide jobs at 150%, this is
huge.
Huge for us right now.
So I guess for me, the impact I see on us here in this building is from 3 o'clock on. Right now, you can't get down this street very quickly.
Yeah.
The traffic congestion is continuing to get worse and worse. The Central Business District plan does not require new businesses that are going into a current space to create new parking, because the intent was it was already created through those small businesses. And then SoReady got involved, and the city touted how excited they are that they brought in First Call Resolution with 200 jobs, which destroyed parking in downtown for most of those other businesses.
It was about a 3 to 5 year headache for the city council, I can tell you.
And now to say 200 more jobs into that downtown area without having parking mitigated and traffic mitigating, that's a huge concern to me.
You're in the wrong building to be concerned about it.
Well, it affects us. It affects our ability to get to different areas.
We take that issue to the city council. We don't take it to Dutch Bros. We take it to ODOT. We don't take it to...
Well, ODOT, and I think a lot of the snarl is down there at the construction site.
Oh, wait.
Getting across
the whole way, and the lights aren't working quite right. There's that one at the end that just doesn't flow.
Yes.
You know, that constantly makes everything else back up. The pause that people have to do in that middle lane for the railroad tracks. I saw a dump truck going over that yesterday, and they almost lost half their load. Not really, but all of the rocks that are back on their bumper that were fine for 10 miles to get there, they all went in the street right there. So who knows? Windows are getting... It's just a mess. We need to go over there, and that needs to be one of our issues every time we meet with the council. Is that you've got to get on board, run on point. They're thinking around with Allen Creeks in the world, and they're not solving the real issue.
We need the third lane, commuter lane. That's another start. Fight for another day.
And with this, so, like I said, they do. The city has been discussing a separate agreement with them on the parking issues. They just don't want it to be part of this.
Their authority to do it is in this.
They could. They could include it in
here. They don't have the authority to do it outside of this.
Their authority
to add any infrastructure is through an enterprise zone. And that's part of the language in the ORS about an enterprise zone.
They could add it in here. Mm-hmm. A city and a business can also do an outside agreement through their permitting processes as well. So, and that is, I believe, the route they're taking.
They don't want us weighing in on it. We would be able to weigh in on it if
we're in this. We can weigh in on it. We have the right to demand they deal with it through the enterprise zone.
We could. However, I want to remind commissioners, this is why I came here last week, to make sure we weren't going to add anything extra.
And it's what I said last week, too, the same concern. And I didn't know it was Dutch Bros last week, and I had that concern. Because of... I still get calls from people complaining about the parking downtown and saying, can the county help with anything? I know that we can't, but it's something that is such a mess that I still get calls on.
Yeah, I would say this, and, you know, there's no guarantee in this perspective, but when you have a reputable company, I don't think they're going to not provide the
parking. I don't say First Call's not a reputable company. I just think it's not appropriate to be placed downtown in the Central Business District. So if we are looking at that as an opportunity for big employers, then they need to do something different with their parking policy.
But we do want employees downtown. We want as many employees downtown as we can. So they're
walking
around.
The second part of my sentence was deal with the parking policy to accommodate that.
I think that parking is probably going to be in the forefront of any discussion if you're going to add 75 to 200 employees.
They still have to get the permits.
I gotta think.
The permits have to agree with their code. It's not in the code to change the parking. They have to change their code to address the parking. The only opportunity they have to address the parking is through the enterprise zone, which allows them to add infrastructure.
But the city can put conditions on that permit and require additional things.
Based on what authority?
I think we'll work this out. This is not our...
Yeah,
this is not what I don't want to deal with it any longer.
That's fine.
I'm in favor of it.
Yeah.
But let's definitely...
I'm in favor of this... deal here. I don't like that, you know, we create a urban renewal district, and then we create now the enterprise thing, and we're just taking things off the tax rolls for long periods of time, and then all of a sudden we've got to go to the taxpayer because we don't have enough money.
We already had the enterprise zone, though. This isn't something new that we're creating. It's just a matter of approving an application under current program.
Correct. I don't think in the 20, I can't think of anything that's qualified for this anywhere in Josephine County, as long as we've had an enterprise zone, there isn't anything.
This is our first long-term one in Southwest Oregon.
That's pretty easy to do. You can drive
around. And it's here, not in White City.
We're going to do this.
I'm in favor.
Too long. And,
so what do you need from us?
So I just want to let you know, this will move forward to Wednesday's meeting for approval. This, though, is I can't give you the final you need to sign until after City Council meets on Monday. Because City Council still could technically change this.
They can change this.
But I'll mark it as a draft and send it over. But
that's fine.
Like I said,
draft
if I don't need to turn it.
It needs to be clearly delineated as draft every page.
Yes. Big, bold letters.
Yeah. So it's draft.
The watermark would be great.
Okay, I'll see if I can put the watermark.
Sometimes when we scan it in, there's stuff.
I have the Word version, so I can put that.
Okay.
What's that? Yeah, one other thing if I can bring up, I got this yesterday, and this is just something to let you know about. Okay. So I just want to let you know that they're proposing a new transmission line from Grants Pass to Whetstone. Whetstone is between Gold Hill and Meridian, I guess.
Meridian, Idaho?
No, not here. This is about 50 miles. It is about 5 miles in Josephine County. Look at the red line.
The red line.
So we have about 5 miles in Josephine County. That entails about 50 acres when you're including all the right-of-way. Majority of it is in Jackson County. And basically what they want to do is they want to decommission the existing 115 volt KV. What is KV?
KVA.
It's KV on here, so I'm not sure. I'm not expert in that. So they want to replace the existing 115 transmission line and put in one that's double. So they want to put one that's 230. Again,
are they going to follow the same route? This follows right along. I'm assuming this is the one that's above Foothill, goes over the top. If you're on the freeway, you can look up on the hillside and you see it follow the freeway.
Yes.
All the way to Rogue River.
Yes.
And then it cuts out.
Yes.
Misses I-5 and then goes to Gold Hill. Got it.
Yep. And I do have...
So they don't need any right-of-way...
In some areas, this is for Ricky. In some areas, they are widening the right-of-way. So that is a concern for us. But here's the way it works.
Is it our property?
No, it's private property. Well, because what happened was last fall, apparently, the Energy Facility Siting Council appointed the Josephine County Board of County Commissioners as a special advisory group for the requested amendment to the Eugene to Medford transmission line site certification.
They do that, and they're going to do the same thing for counties that are affected by the pipeline for the Coos deal. So
what that means, though, is the applicant, which is... the project is called Sam's Valley Reinforcement Project, but the applicant can choose to go through a conditional use permit in Josephine County for our section and go through a conditional use permit for Jackson for their section, or because of your position that you took last fall, the state, will then process, they'll do the application from the state level instead of the county levels. But what they do is they work with our staff to see what kind of conditions would you want on this. What are you concerned about? We forward those up to the state, and they take care of this project all on our behalf.
That sounds great.
But I am here just to let you know what's happening, and if you do get questions on it or people complain about it, you know the project is going to be going on, and you can direct them to us.
The irony is I talked to the CEO of Pacific Corp on Saturday at a function I was at. He and I met, and I can't remember his name. Really nice guy, and he says he's going to be down here, and he said he'd be happy to talk to us. I didn't know even what project he was really talking about, but I pretended to forget it. Oh, yeah, I heard about that. Now I have.
The only thing I would be concerned about, my main concern would be fire up there, and I'm assuming they're going to double the right-of-way or make it wider, because when one of those lines, one of those lines blows, it shoots fire and so far in so many directions, more volts, more sparks.
That's a really good point. We should illustrate that with that map of the propensity for fire in Southern Oregon.
Right,
ODF
right.
Put out. But I think we'll have an opportunity to put our concerns. I'm fine with this process.
I
Let's look at the timeline about when we do it and think about those things. I'm thinking about runoff, too, on those granicular soils on those hills, and how is that contributing?
Yes.
Is there anybody who lives in that area that
the residential side
what
of it?
What can they do to keep the runoff
flow
and the water?
Yeah, toward Rocco's pit and all that other stuff.
Stuff like that.
But,
so the person, our contact person on this is actually somebody from the Department of Energy. They're the ones who actually handle the project. So, so anyways, that was just an FYI so you know what's going on.
Have you met, is it Christina who's the Pacific Corp person down here?
Oh, are you talking to Christina Kruger?
Yeah.
Yeah, she's on the Serenity board with us.
Okay.
And I'm actually trying to schedule a meeting with her right now with a client in the Illinois Valley.
Yeah, good. They need more power.
Well, I don't see where our little section of the world there is gonna, well, we just got some concerns for 5 miles, 3 miles it looks like.
Yeah, it's just about five, and you know, it's the majority of it is in forest, commercial, or woodlot resource zones.
Yeah,
so I don't think we'll hear a big uproar from the public because there's very little through rural residential.
I think it's something that we need to address is the runoff, because this line is above a ton, a lot of residential things along I-5. This line's above them. So.
And it sure looks like that's providing a greater power source to our area, so it seems like a good thing. I mean,
is this transmission line coming from Sand Valley to us, or is that coming to us or away from us?
Well, this is the Eugene to Medford one, so...
It's coming through us.
We're just a cog, and we're just part of the path. It's already there.
Right.
So they're taking it down. And like I said, they're doubling it.
It looks like this is a branch off of it. If the blue is the main line to Eugene, and the red is...
No, they're actually...
Or is there two lines? The pink one is the low voltage, the blue is the heavy voltage.
There's an existing 115-foot line which will be taken out of service and demolished. The conductor will be removed and disposed of. They talk about the foundation, and then they put a new one up in their location. So it is decommissioning, putting it up in the same spot. It's just that the new one, because it's more power, will require a greater right of way in some areas.
Cool.
Then work that out. I think it's okay.
Okay.
I'm not going to climb up there on any of those poles to work with. They have something I can't see.
I mean, we did get an email last week about permitting process with our county, and one of the feedback I've been getting locally, and I've been passing on to you guys, was that from some of the contractors we get, is the time that it takes to get permits in Josephine County is making it harder for businesses, because it's time that they're not making a profit.
Yeah.
They're not in business there, and that's not a matter of the cost. They can go to another town and pay more, but they can get it in the same day and be back out on the street or in a shorter amount of time.
Time is money.
From multiple sources, I've heard that the amount of time it takes to get permits is what's actually hurting businesses in our community. How do we change that?
I talked to a guy yesterday. I've known my entire life since I was 5 years old. 16 months is when he was filing his things. He says he's in the home stretch of trying to get this this building built. He owns millions of dollars of property in a vineyard. Been doing this in the Illinois Valley for 40 years, and he says this was one of the most challenging. He doesn't think he's going to do anything like this anymore in Josephine County.
Okay, first
16 months.
So when you do hear those, I wish they would either talk to me or you guys would talk to me so I could find out what's going on.
Do you have like that at your desk? You know, it says, John Rasher, commissioner in Jackson County, used to say, I want to move my office to the planning office and have just a little tag that says, if you don't get what you need here, you can contact the director at this number. Or in that case, it would have been a liaison from the board, Commissioner John Rasher. He was a developer. Something of that mechanism. How do people know that?
My staff, so if they can tell that somebody's not happy or is questioning
they're
something.
They're not very good at that, because we are hearing people that are not so happy.
Yeah, well, I guarantee you they're not coming to me first, because what happens is I do get people,
yeah.
And I meet with them, and they're like, thank you so much. I mean, they're very good about it. I will say this. There's always two sides to every story.
Right.
And if you want a permit for a garage through building safety, you're going to get that the same day. So if you want a permit for a grocery store, yeah, it's going to take some time.
But I guess that's what I'm asking is if I'm told that a normal contractor in Jackson County can go into Jackson County Planning And if these things are in order, they come out of there with their permit to get started. Now, there's things that come along the way and inspections and such like that and final occupancy, but they can get it in that day. And so I'm wondering, what's different? What checklist do they have in place that somebody can come in and get a permit in the same day? Because I didn't have someone say, I need it in one day. What I'm hearing from contractors is it takes so long, it's not cost effective for us to do business in Josephine County.
Okay, let me explain the process to you. And first of all, just so you know, we did have a staff person go to Jackson County, sit there, and try to go through the permit process, and I can guarantee you it does not happen in a day.
Okay.
We know this, okay? There's different types of permits. I'm going to start with a business. If a business wants to expand, by state law, we have to go through a site plan review process. The state says you are going to send it out to the agencies for X amount of time. Those agencies review it, and then you're going to have, first of all, sometimes you have, depending on the application, you have to declare it complete within a certain amount of time. You have to send it to agencies for a certain amount of time, or it has to be given to the neighbors for a certain amount of time. There are some things, a regular development permit, which you can get in a week, tops. You know, it's one of those where they apply for it, you review it to make sure they've met everything, and you turn them around in a couple days, really. If they then have to go to building safety, like I said, there's certain things they can issue you right there. Just have a seat, 5 minutes, I'll get you your permit. But there are things that they have to go through. For example, if you're putting an addition on a building, there's fire life safety issues and things like that that have to be checked.
Are the other agencies not doing that?
Well, one thing...
That's what my question is. Do they just move?
Well, I think you're getting...
We're told that it's faster to go through Jackson County by a lot compared to here.
And so, ask them what they're getting permitted for.
Well, they're businesses. So these are business owners with businesses. And so that's my question is, do we have a checklist that people have ahead of time that's online that this is what you need to bring in to help your process be quicker? This is what your expectation is.
It's on their application, yes. But it is, and now that we're online,
So if that checklist is on an application and they have all those pieces, what are we checking for that's not included based on the checklist?
And can we look down that and say, okay, you need this, this, and this on this checklist of 20 things, and you have these three that you need to do. But I'm going to go ahead and issue your permit today, so you can get started. So you can go to the bank and say, I have a permit now. I need my construction loan money released or whatever.
Get them started, and then meet with us next week, and we'll follow up on this. Or
I don't know how that works.
Jackson County and Josephine County are bound by the same state laws. Okay?
Right.
The only way that you can get it quicker is if you have more staff to respond to it.
Well, and that's what I'm asking. What does it need to take that we can be pro-business and helping a business get, because as long as they're in building phase, they're not making money. So the sooner that we can get them through the permitting process, the sooner that we can get them approved to have their occupancy and doors open, the sooner they're able to get return on their investment.
And I agree 100% with you. I know all this. We know from an economic development standpoint, we want to be the most business-friendly place in Southwest Oregon. And we've been trying to improve the processes since I've been here. And
yeah,
we will continue to improve them. One thing, so Jackson has more people to help. The other thing is Jackson has, because they have more staff, they can cut down that state timeline a little bit. And I have pressured my staff to do that. But I'll give you an example. This past week, Nora had 19 applications. I think James had 18. I think Rania had 8. The new guy already has 9. I mean, we're dealing with
a lot of stuff. That's his official name, by the way, on his payroll, says the new guy.
Mark, who used to work for us. It was really nice because Mark Schechtenader, so he worked for it. He left 2 years
ago. No wonder you called him new guy.
Yeah, and he came back, which is nice because he's already pretty easy to get going. He's already alone at the counter and stuff like that, but... We are doing it. We continue to look at how we can improve these processes. We've come a long way, I guarantee you.
Yeah.
But I'd like to know specifically what permits they're talking about, I know.
Is it possible that Jackson County has one district for businesses?
No, they don't.
That, you know, you bring in and say, I'm a business and I need to get this going ASAP, and you say, let's give that to the north.
And I will say this, too. Josephine County is more attractive to businesses, because we don't have the SDCs. The only
but what we were hearing is
it's not money.
The thing, it's the time. So yep. What are the evaluation types of mechanisms that, I mean, if I were the director, I would probably be doing a follow-up cold calls from time to time with different applications. Have you ever thought about, you know, once a week I'm going to make 2 or 3 calls.
How did you find our process?
Just hear what the people are saying, you know, and engaging them. Because we're feeling a fair, and we don't hear the good stuff.
You don't.
We don't. We only hear the challenging ones. But when there are friends, when there are people we know about situations that are, frankly, from their perspective, and they're going to be credible in our minds. My high school principal said she couldn't get the garage put together so she could the contractor could store their equipment. It doesn't matter what your staff person is telling you. What is happening on the ground is the impression is that contractor can't put the walls together for that garage so their tools are secure. That's a friend of mine from the Illinois Valley, and I've known him since I was 4. He comes to me. He may be just not as diligent of getting it done. But 16 months, that's what I hear. And I don't know all the specifics of why.
That sounds, again, that's why I'd like to know the name so we can get
you
the details.
What are you doing to get to know those elements?
I talk with a lot of people, for example, and that this particular thing about building a garage before you build a house, yes, our code says you cannot do that. I'm hired to enforce our code.
I have amendments. Joseph County Code says you can't do that?
Yep. And I actually have amendments before you that help them get to that path.
Right.
So, I mean.
Yeah. Making progress on it.
As we hear the complaints, as people talk to us, sit down with us, and we understand, like I had a guy who's like, why do I have to go through this full stormwater management plan? This is crazy. This is a grudge. You know what? You're right. I'm glad you told me that. Let's propose some amendments to that. It goes to the Plan Commission on June 25th. I don't know those. I'll be honest with you.
In the big packet that you brought us going to the Planning Commission, that's where it's at.
What's funny is that there's a lot of in-house administration things that are not due to our code. Where is your discretion?
The code says you have to have a house before you have an accessory building. Let's go back to the marijuana thing, remember? RR5.
You have to have a full house? That's in a proposed code that is stale.
But you know what we do?
Right now.
So the code says you have to have a house before you have an accessory building. We actually say to them, you know what, get your foundation floor and your subfloor approved,
and then
we'll give you your
And then they come back and they say, no, we need your walls up.
Nope.
Verbatim, I've heard these things.
I can hand you a policy
or then
in
writing. It's not being applied by your staff. And then, no, we need the roof on. It's like, really? I'm 99% of the way done. I needed this done right after the foundation. All I wanted to do was put up the walls and stuff.
See, and I think that's where you're getting a different story. I can show you in writing.
I'm okay
the staff
with that.
Director.
I'm okay with that.
I know.
I'm wondering how many of these complaints that are getting blamed on planning come from Public Works, because we've talked about that before, too.
Well,
it gets over to planning. Public Works has got some kind of hang up.
I don't mean anything I've referenced. I mean, if there's occasional.
Yeah.
We've had, they won't issue me a driveway permit, stuff like that. But
some of it's a misunderstanding. Some of it's blaming the planning department.
Yeah.
Like I said, I want to know that.
Help this stuff out?
I want to know when you get a complaint. I want to know what it is so I can look into it, find out, is there really a problem?
Yeah.
Because historically, since I've been here, I have found, and I think it's getting a little better, but historically people, rather than ever come to the department, they'd go to the commissioners, and the commissioners would say, do this, and the staff would just do it. So people know to go to the commissioners to complain. I'm just saying that's from my perspective.
Yeah,
in that
email,
though,
like. you can't have people leaving and thinking it's eight weeks.
I've never seen
understand.
The email.
I don't know. Well.
Why isn't that shared with me?
Because there's a hesitation on the part of the public, for whatever reason, Julie. I don't control those perceptions.
Yeah. Well, then it should be forwarded with, well.
I did get engaged with you on this deal. So.
Is this the one last week?
And that's the process that, you know, the public is comfortable with. There's an element of retribution for causing, throwing out. You can't blame them. You can't blame us. I don't know who. I'm not looking to place blame.
Yeah, I don't know where that retribution would be coming from. Perhaps before I got here.
People experience stuff now currently with when they put stuff out there, their stuff gets put on the back burner, they feel. So.
We keep, it goes on, you know, it's first come, first serve. So if you apply and. If you apply, there's a deadline that goes in. and you fall into a hopper.
Sure.
We don't go, Joe's friend goes to the top. It doesn't work that way. So
it's perception what we're dealing with, Julie.
I know.
It's not reality that you deal with perception.
But
how do we do that?
Right. And I'm just saying, for me to help the process, I have to know what they're saying.
So what are you doing to know what they're saying?
I'm asking you to share those with me so I know what they're saying so we know how to address it. So I can say, this is what happened. Oh, you're right. This is a problem.
One of the things the city did is they brought in a confidential way, a handful of their contractors that are usual.
Sure.
What are the things we can do better? What are the things that, you know, are working? What are the things that aren't working? Some mechanism, and I'm not sure that's 100% effective for getting that, you know, confidentiality. A lot of people just don't want to tell you what's going on. You know, they'll frankly, path of least resistance, they'll just go somewhere else. They won't.
I understand what you're saying. You're asking like a survey.
How do we engage with them without it coming to us to say, how do you not feel that you're being heard? Because Julie calls 3 people every week. Random. I'm throwing out an example of, we actually try to reach out to people and figure out what's working, what isn't working. If you see a permit when it was filed, you know, in June of 16, and they still haven't gotten it, why haven't they gotten their whatever? You know, those are the kind of customer, what do you call them? I don't know, a survey or something that says, how are we doing?
That's just good customer relations. Follow-up. I used to do that in business. How'd everything go on the job site? Mm-hmm. I'd rather hear it from the customer direct. Well, you know, the guy was smoking out by his truck, and I didn't like that. Fine. That's why we changed policy, no smoking during business hours. Those things you need to know about. One, and I'm not defending your department. I'm nothing of the sort. But I've known contractors that will use the planning process for scheduling. They've got the job locked up with Mr. Jones in his house. They say, why aren't you on my house today? Oh, I just can't get him out here to inspect before I close this up.
Actually, he's working on another job.
He's overworking on another job.
He never called for the inspection.
So that you can be used as a scapegoat. But I'm not
saying
that.
Can we schedule those online?
The
inspections? Can they be scheduled online?
Now you can when this, yeah. We're still working the bugs out on the system, but yes, you can schedule the inspections. You can see where your application is in the process. You can see where it's in the review stage, the whole thing with the new system.
So I still like the idea that in that application they have a checklist, and if they come in that checklist, there's something that they can be given and say, okay, we'll review this. You may start this process, and we'll, you know, like a preliminary permit, get started based on your checklist. We'll be verifying the information or stuff like that. This is tentative. You may get, you know, upfront kind of saying, but that they can start it.
So they know they can move forward.
And if that checklist is out front and they know that they're bringing it in, that they can get a quicker response, because it's not just coming in and saying, what do I have to do on the application?
That's why we go through the application and say, you're going to need this. We have that. The new application, which we did last fall, has a checklist of what you need. But I also want to say this. There is part of the process that does go quicker in Jackson County, and that is the DEQ process. So if you want to build a house, I'm going to say, okay, you're going to need a septic permit from DEQ. You're going to go to DEQ and you're going to go through that process. In Jackson County, they have enough staff that they don't have DEQ issuing those permits for them. Some of those permits for them, they have regular staff people that can issue those permits on staff. We do not have soil scientists. We do not have people certified to do septic installations or septic reviews.
So they have that many staff in Jackson County
that
have all that?
There's a combination of the state that takes the DEQ responsibilities. We're one. There's Hughes County also doesn't do that. We could. They charge $700 for a septic tank inspection. We don't need to charge that. I mean, there's that. We might be getting enough permitting to merit not losing resources on having somebody certified to do that in-house.
Well, my concern, too, is DEQ's here once a week for how many hours?
For 2 more weeks, and then they're not here at all.
And that's the bigger issue, is we're not able to help people get through the process because DEQ's... Why are they not going to be here?
And I will say this, too. I will say this. We have also tried to improve the process. We brought Public Works in one morning a week now. And we brought the Illinois Valley Soil and Water Conservation in one day a week.
And your monthly consultation on projects or something, permitting stuff, once a month you guys get together on...
Oh, we get together, you mean with staff? Every week.
Public Works.
Oh, Public Works.
Bob said last time he was here that there's some sort of combined meeting that's going on.
We try to get together. Yeah, I missed the last one. But yeah, so Eric is there every Wednesday, and it works out great because somebody's there and they have a question about the access. We're like, well, Public Works is here. Would you like to talk to them? They're here every Wednesday. I mean,
progress is time.
Progress.
Yes. I just want us to keep having a dialogue of what we can do to help you continue that progress.
And I would say the biggest thing is let me know when you're getting them so I can look at it and say, are we the problem?
And this is our first meeting, really, that's been just a general discussion since that email came. So it's been our first opportunity to have that conversation.
Sure.
But it's not the first place I'd heard it, so that's why I brought it up.
Okay. Anything else for Julie? No. Thank you, Julie.
Dan, you have an 11 o'clock, so I'm going to stick around.
What's that?
You and I have a meeting at 11, so I'm going to stick around.
Okay. Stick around. That'll be 12. Item number 4A, resolution, under board business, is resolution number 2018-031, the matter of appointment to Special Transportation Advisory Committee. Just want to move that forward to the consent calendar. I don't have that on.
It's Jeff McConnell who runs Ready Ride.
Right, right.
And he's also a pilot, so quite frankly, the fact that he's running one of the alternate transportation groups in town, I think that would be appropriate for him to be on there.
Yeah, he's good. Okay, so we'll move that forward to consent. Item B, resolution number 2018-036, the matter of appointment to the Advisory Committee for Forestry Affairs.
I saw the name was Don something. He's a reappointment, and he had the department head's referral.
Okay. Well, these are reappointment. I think I'm good with that. Item C, matters from commissioners.
I'm going to hold off today because I have a tight schedule today.
Yeah, me too. So with that, we are adjourned at 10:46 a.m.